everyone. Welcome back. Red Ice Radio returns. We have another show for you today together with Bart and Michael from Holland or the Netherlands. These guys are putting on an alt-right conference in Rotterdam called Erkenbrand with Millennial Woes, Roger Devlin, and also a third speaker from Holland that remains anonymous so far. We'll be talking about the situation in the Netherlands today and their decision to start organizing and getting people together. The other news is that we'll be live streaming this event through our YouTube channel. It's going to be on Tuesday, the 27th, starting at 7 p.m. or 1900 hours Central European Summertime. This is 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll have details for you on our site, redice.tv/live. It's going to be through our YouTube channel, so definitely subscribe at youtube.com/redeyesradio so you don't miss any updates or when we kick off. Well, Bart and Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's great to have you both here. Excellent to actually speak with and connect with some people from Holland for once. We haven't really gone into the nitty-gritty and specifically talk about the situation in Holland, so I'm looking forward to that. But first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, excellent. Why don't we just kind of talk a bit about, obviously, you guys have a conference coming up that I want to make sure that we plug and discuss and you know, kind of talk about how all that came together. But give me some of the background on you guys first. I don't know how you would introduce yourselves, but tell us how you kind of came to these topics and how all of this kind of led up to the conference. Michael, let's begin with you.
Well, for me, it really goes back to Pim Fortuyn, actually. I'm not sure if you heard of him, but he was a very famous Dutch politician about 10 years ago, even 15 years ago even. I was only 12 years old by then, but... Yeah, he got assassinated. And yeah, as a child, you don't really know the real background of the story, not really the ideological reasons for the murderer to assassinate him. But yeah, it still occurred to me, this is a very strange thing that a man gets assassinated for his views. And my parents were also shocked. They were apolitical and they thought, this madman killed a politician. It hadn't happened for centuries in the Netherlands. So that was my awakening in a sense. And later on, I've grown more ideological. I started reading the French New Right. And later on, I found sites like alternativeright.com and countercurrents.com. And yeah, that really, really awoke me in a sense to the greater... ideological reasons one might have for opposing certain topics that are now occurring in throughout Europe and the Western world.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a lot to discuss there later in terms of the situation in Holland. Bart, let's hear how you ended up in this.
Yeah, I guess I got uncocked at quite an early age during my time in primary school. I'm talking about 1990s now. Already 50% of my class was from foreign descent. Later on, as Michael said just previously, of course, Pim Fortuyn got assassinated. And this was a huge thing in the Netherlands. Just a few years later, another like an Islamic critic, Theo van Gogh, got assassinated as well by Muslim terrorists.
I remember that one. That was pretty shocking, actually.
Yeah, he got slaughtered in the middle of the streets in a horrific way. And I remember very well, I will never forget this, that the people in my class, they were telling me like, yeah, but he asked for it and he got what was coming for him. this thought never really left my mind. It was just unbelievable. I realized at that moment that, wow, these people are so different than we are. It's unbelievable. It's like a fifth column within our country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what it is. It's a fifth column. It's an invasion.
Yes.
Which is directed and led by our politicians. This is the difference. I mean, it's not like we have an Islamic army. Well, it's turning into that, but it's not like it's been penetrating in beyond our borders into our defenses. We have a political class and elite class that have allowed this to happen, not unbeknownst to people, but they've done it behind the backs of the people. That's what's so disturbing about this.
Well, I sort of agree, but I also have to say that some of them are quite open about it, that they want immigration. It's not all of the elite that says we really want immigration, but part of the elite really openly says that they want immigration, and that they want immigration because we don't reproduce. The latter is true, of course, but still, we still don't need immigration. I mean, the blatancy of it, I think, is quite staggering if you realize it.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't they didn't ask us about it, and as we know, the United Nations have proposed population replacement. We talk about it all the time on the show. It's very important to remember that. But before we get into the situation in specifically in Holland, how things are today, and much of the backdrop to that. Do tell us a bit about the upcoming conference that you guys have. I want to make sure that we plug that in the beginning and that people know that there's activity starting to happen in Europe. There are more and more of these meetups and groups beginning to form. And this one is, of course, more public and open. Erken Brand, tell us more about this, guys.
Yeah, sure. Actually, Michael and I just met, I think, a few months ago. We don't know each other for that long. And we met through a mutual friend of ours through Twitter. And both of us, we kind of agreed that it's time to do something and not just participate in internet activism. So we started out with a fairly small group. And we went on to look for other people who think just like us. We started a website as well, erkenbrand.nl. This is how you can reach us. And in the beginning, we were a fairly small group, around seven people, I guess. And as of now, we are starting to reach serious numbers. Tens of people have joined. Our numbers are growing every month. And on the 27th of September, we will organize our first conference. Roger Devlin will be there. An important announcement we have to make is that unfortunately, Craig Johnson won't be able to be there, but we have a great replacement for him, which is Millennial Woes. And furthermore, we have another speaker from the Netherlands who wishes to remain anonymous at this point.
The conference will be held in Rotterdam. If any Dutch listeners want to be there, I advise them to visit our website and send us an email. Our website is www.erkenbrand.nl. They can easily find our email address there. It is in the evening of the 27th of September.
Very good. Rotterdam, yeah. That's it's more on the west coast, of course, of of Holland, Netherlands. How is the situation in some of the cities around in Holland these days? I mean, I know that, Amsterdam is pretty bad. How is it out in the countryside and in smaller towns? Rotterdam is, of course, pretty big, but how is the situation there, guys? If you can, describe it a little bit to us for those who just haven't visited or haven't been to Holland.
Well, I live in Amsterdam. In Amsterdam, what really frustrates me is kind of becoming a cosmopolitan city. So the most used language in the city center is English, because a lot of expats live there. It's full of tourists, which is logical, of course. But when I actually go there, I have to order a beer in English.
Or you're kidding.
When I get no, I'm not kidding. The people that work there are all expats. They're from all over the world. They don't understand Dutch. They don't understand Dutch in a lot of stores. And you know, this is what the elite wants our country. Would they like to see our country become a cosmopolitan city? Then Amsterdam is kind of divided in different neighborhoods. So the whites live in these parts, in the more richer parts. You have a lot of bad neighborhoods. I guess over 50% of the population is from foreign descent as of 2016.
But there's a lot of, I think to clarify, there's a lot of white immigrants in Holland too, right?
Yeah, there are plenty of expats, I guess, most of them in the larger cities, but also a lot from non-Western descent.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Michael, how would you describe the situation when you get out a bit from the cities? Is it mostly mostly white there, or is a lot of the immigration being settled in smaller towns as well at this point?
Well, the general picture of the countryside is that there is still a very large portion of it is just Dutch, especially in the smaller towns. And the problem there is that the government is sending all those so-called refugees into special refugee centers in the countryside. So that changes the perspective a bit. But permanent settlement of foreigners is usually in the big cities and not so much in the countryside. So if you want to avoid the diversity, then yeah, you should definitely go to the countryside. Although even in the countryside, it is slowly becoming obvious that there is a foreign minority coming and immigrating to the Netherlands. Even there, even though it won't reach 10% in most of the towns, but yeah, you still can see some headscarves, Muslims or black people wandering around. So yeah, no town is really without diversity, or you have to go really deep into the countryside. But yeah, usually there are a couple of them.
How much did you guys get hit during the migrant waves here in 2015 and 2016? I mean, it's been kind of pouring in. If we go far back, you know, unfortunately, but the real faucet, if you will, was opened in 2015. Unfortunately, Germany, as you guys know, has been hit probably the hardest. But per capita, I'd say Sweden is probably hit more than that. Where in this is Holland?
That's a good question.
In terms of numbers, if you know, I mean, I know it's difficult because this is after all illegal immigration, right? So we actually don't know. But what would you say if you would take a guess?
I think the official figures are not that high, at least comparatively. Germany is by far has by far had the most immigrants. I think we have a couple of maybe 20,000-30,000 or so. I can't really tell you for sure, but our elite constantly reminds us that it is not that many and that we can still do this. And yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it?
I think the number was around, this is just a wild guess, but I think the number was around 80,000 or more, something like that, and not even a year. So, yeah, it was quite high. And next to, also the legal immigration continued, of course. So, yeah, it's like a time bomb.
And that's fairly high. What's the population number right now?
17 million.
17 million. So it's still pretty high, and as you said, a lot of that is immigration already.
Yeah, oh, a lot. And recently, I read an article which said that in just 15 years' time, the population will continue to grow with an additional million, solely through because of immigration. So 1 million more people in 15 years' time. It's amazing.
How is the infrastructure? Can the country actually handle this? We have in Sweden a situation where housing is becoming extremely expensive. There's nothing around. The government's trying to build new, dwellings or whatever, but they just can't keep up with the demand. Is it similar in Holland?
I would say thus far, the government is doing quite a good job. I mean, for the number of people, I looked up the numbers just a minute ago. I mean, it's about 30,000, and I mean they've handled it mostly. And there were some cases of migrants roaming the streets and making a mock, but generally they were not left out on the streets, and they were sent into those special camps and remained there for the most part. So in that sense, our government, I think, is doing a good job. But the main point I object to is that they even want to do this. So especially on the scale that it is happening right now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is still, after all, population replacement. That's the main problem that we have with all of this. I don't know if you guys saw in France, they... We're struggling with something that had been dubbed Stalingrad. You had tons of, I think it was primarily actually African migrants that had settled along the streets, and there was trash everywhere and tents and all these kinds of things. Is this a do you guys have something similar, as far as you know, in Holland, that you have people that are actually kind of just setting up camp somewhere in the city and they're kind of trashing the place, or do they manage to kind of keep that off the streets for the most part?
Yeah, I think they managed to keep it off the streets. Like Michael said before, they're spreading these people out all over the country. So even the little villages are being occupied by these people. They put them in gyms, in empty buildings. They basically put them everywhere, but they spread it out evenly all over the country, including areas that never had any immigrant presence before.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. So what is the political situation right now, and how would you guys describe, I guess, the mentality of most people? Is there starting to be some resistance right now? Is there people that are starting to get concerned with this, and the political parties that are kind of at least speaking up about immigration, are they gaining more traction?
Yeah, I suppose this already started with Pim Fortuyn, which we already mentioned before. He was opposed to more immigration. He, of course, got assassinated. So there was another guy who stood up after him and who got a lot of votes. That was Geert Wilders. He heads the Party of Freedom. They have about 10% of the vote right now, and that's been pretty consistent since I think 2006.
Hasn't grown that much since then.
Well, it has grown to about 15% at some point, I think. But the last election was played up by the media as if it was a race between the socialist left and the liberal right. So he lost quite a number of votes to the liberal right party, the VVD. But he has a solid base of around 10% of the vote. So there is a quite a significant anti-immigrant sentiment in the Netherlands. By the way, it is not exclusive to just the PVV, so the Party of Freedom. You even see in parties like the VVD, the Right Liberal Party, or even the centrists like CDA, the Christian Democrats, some as people that are opposed to the continuing flood of people that is happening right now, but it is still not significant, I would say, because Wilders is really the only one who wants to put a hard stop on the immigration, whereas the rest it's all half measures and within the framework of the current liberal system. So I'm not really satisfied with their proposals, and I think Wilders is a start. Still not good enough, but at least it is a start, and we should be happy that he's there.
Yeah, I mean, he has what is it? They have 15 seats, I believe. Looking at some of the election statistics here now, and there's a general election coming up in 2017. Is there any indications that what's happened with the migrant invasion lately is going to change some of these numbers, that they might get some more votes? What do you guys think?
Yeah, as of now, according to the polls, the PVV is the biggest party in the Netherlands. So they estimate his number of seats at about at least double from what he has now.
Oh, great.
But usually before the elections, great media show starts and all the politicians appear on TV, and I don't know, these polls fluctuate all the time, so it's kind of a false hope, in my opinion.
Right. Well, do you guys have any concerns about, I know there's a lot of people that do have concerns about Geert Wilders, same with most nationalistic politicians in Europe. They're kind of cucked in certain aspects. They are maybe maybe worse in terms of the foreign policy in certain aspects. But I don't know. Yes, it's better than nothing, right? We got to begin somewhere. At least we can maybe put a stop to immigration. And hopefully Geert and the Freedom Party would actually follow through on this, right?
Yeah.
I'm a bit skeptical of Geert Wilders. I mean, he focuses a lot on this Muslim issue. And he presents it as if the issue is only limited to this, to Islamic migration, or to take it even further, just about Islam. So if migrants swear they become Christian, if they convert, then suddenly they would all be welcome here.
Right. I mean,
that's just silly to me. We have to get to a point where real ethno-nationalism is the key, and right now the nationalism in the Netherlands is really takes more the form of a civic nationalism and not really ethno-nationalism.
Yes, and furthermore, Wilders and his PVV are also there. They're constantly promoting liberal values, and we have to defend our freedoms. Just the basic conservative talk that nobody actually wants to hear.
Yeah, it's like Western values. That's like free markets, immigration, and equality. Right? That's what we're standing for.
Yeah, it annoys me quite a lot. I mean, it's like they can't see that part of the reason why all those migrants are coming here is because we have those values. I mean, those values are undermining our whole system, our whole society. And it's like they can't grasp that we should at least put a certain barrier to those values in the sense that we shouldn't shoot ourselves in the foot with our generosity and our openness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this old guard, I gotta say, I mean, they just don't get anything about like racial differences. They have basically ethnic autism, right? They just don't understand that it's like, if you replace the population, it's going to be a completely different country. And if voila, when you've done that, all these precious values that they cherish so much, they're going to be gone with those people, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I would also like to add one thing, which I think is very important. That Geert Wilders is a massive Zionist.
Right.
We should not forget that.
Yeah, that's right.
He's funded by, I think, most of the people think he's funded by rich Jews in the United States. I don't remember. Michael, what was the name again of this guy in the United States?
I think it was Horowitz.
Yes, exactly. Like the people like David Horowitz. And these are the people that are funding Geert Wilders, actually.
Yeah, and Wilders goes on pilgrimage to Israel quite often. Yeah. He is personal friends with Netanyahu, I think. So, it is quite well known that that Wilders has a very close ties with Israel and the Jews in general.
Yeah, that's very worrying. You know, yeah, I see an article here from when it says 2015. David Horowitz Center gave Geert Wilders, I mean, that's only 18,000 euros, so it's not that much. But there's donations here, basically, and interest. Which is good. I mean, it's good that you guys are aware of that, because unfortunately we have a situation now in Europe where we're kind of painted into a corner. We have the liberals, they're advocating for open borders on one end, and then we have these supposed nationalists that are incredibly pro the very lobby groups that have actually advocated in many regards for the immigration itself, right? So we're like painted into a corner. We don't have any options. There's no political party or voices that really represents our deeper level concerns, right?
Henrik, you're absolutely right, and furthermore, we shouldn't forget that the political system is very difficult to cope with as well. Actually, the situation is comparable to the situation in Belgium or France, for example, like the Vlaams Belang and the Front National. There is like a cordon sanitaire behind around every nationalist party in Europe. And which leads to that they will never get seats in the end. I believe Wilders was allowed into a coalition indirectly a few years ago, but his hands were tight. He couldn't do anything, even when he had some level of influence.
Interesting. So how are things like with terrorism? Some of these neighborhoods, Belgium had an incredible problem with this, of course. Certain areas, Germany has had specifically with these they call them lone wolves, but these knife attacks and things like that. How are things like in Holland?
We have a couple of neighborhoods that are quite well known, like in Utrecht, Overvecht, or in Amsterdam, of course. You have quite segregated neighborhoods where these people congregate. And but I personally believe that it is not as bad as in Belgium, for example. I mean, in Belgium, you really have parts of Antwerp where you can't go if you're not a Muslim. Or in Paris, it's the same thing. Here in the Netherlands, they really try to mix up the neighborhoods a bit, mostly through social policy, where they house people, because most of these people are dependent on social welfare. So they get assigned to a certain part of the city, which makes it so that there is still some sort of mix of the population. And I think that that limits the amount of segregation that we that would otherwise occur.
Yeah, and also the state is relatively strong still in the Netherlands. If you compare the situation with Belgium, they're like two countries in one, and the state is a lot weaker there, so terrorism thrives there more easily.
Yeah, we saw a couple of stories come out about this a while back. I think it was a British paper, The Express, spoke about this. It was a couple of immigrant gangs have basically been terrorizing some of the neighborhoods. They even make, I forget what his name was, he was some Turkish immigrant. He was basically making these YouTube videos and, you know, bragging. They were jumping on police cars, bragging about, like, you know, terrorizing people. They were just hitting people. This was a pretty big story in Holland, right? That was actually going around in some of the mainstream channels and stuff.
Yeah, it was. And you're talking right now about the city of Zaandam. This is a very good example of a city with a failed immigration policy. I think back in the 50s and the 60s, a lot of Southern Europeans moved in to the Netherlands to work, like from Italy or Spain and Greece. And a lot of Italians actually settled in the city of Zaandam, and they moved into these workers' buildings. But as soon as the economy improved in their homelands, they returned home. And that was the moment when new waves of immigrants moved into the Netherlands, such as Turks and Moroccans. And all these Turks moved into these worker homes, and they basically transformed entire neighborhoods, such as in this city. And it has been like this for decades. Actually, it surprised me that right now we've heard about this, but it has been going on for decades.
Yeah.
At least since the 1980s or 70s. It's unbelievable.
Oh, I mean, I get so fucking mad. Sorry about the language, folks, but I get so fucking mad when I see this footage, you know. And apparently, even in this article, the detail was like, no one could figure out why the cops weren't there and doing anything. No one was like, you know, acting up. And no one. It's like all rules goes out the window when these groups become a certain number, when they reach a certain, I don't know if they have to be the majority, but there's like a certain percentage that they reach. And at that point, all rules that we have in our high trust Western societies goes out the window, and they just start doing whatever the heck they want.
Yeah, but this is also a question of lack of authority. I mean, if you look at our police, they're not like the Guardia Civil or something.
Right.
They're really pussified in a sense. So these young Moroccans, these young Turks, they just don't have any respect for our police force. And that's why you get such strange footage. I mean, it infuriates me as well. But in another sense, I also understand it, because, I mean, if I see a cop, I just respect him as a law officer. But they just see a representative of us, in a sense, as the enemy. And that's why they respond in that way. And if you don't respond in kind, then you get this twisted sense of respect of authority. They don't recognize the cop as someone who is here to protect all of us, to protect the public sphere, to protect the law. I mean, I think that's the biggest problem we have here in the Netherlands, at least from the perspective of the authorities.
Yeah, Michael's absolutely right. The police, their hands are tied. And I think it also has to do a lot with the people who actually run the police. They're basically, all of them are cultural Marxists. And the police officers on the streets, they actually know what's going on, and they want to do more, but they don't get the authority to do more. always the head of police is a cultural Marxist or judges or people in the media. I think that's the biggest problem we got here.
It's so bad that I'm sure you recall this, Bart, but at some point a major television show interviewed a police head of the police of Amsterdam, I think it was, and he was so anti Wilders that he actually called for Wilders to be hit and to be
be beat up.
Be beat up, yes. So, I mean, it is totally. Who can think of such a crazy thing that the one who is willing to speak up against mass immigration, against the violence of minorities, etc., he is the one who is.
He's the problem. He's the problem.
He's the problem. He's getting appointed.
It was even worse than Michael said. He indeed he said. Wilders should get beat up and he deserves it, but it was even worse. He also said something in a sense like, we're trying to build a new society here, and all these people that voted for the PVV, for the Freedom Party, they don't have a place in the society we are trying to build. It was unbelievable he said that.
Yeah.
This is the head of police, and a few years back, we had a right-wing government with the right-wing liberals and the PVV, and they proposed to illegalize illegal immigration. So illegal immigrants would get jailed. And then again, another head of police from Amsterdam. They're always from Amsterdam. They're the worst. He said, like, well, if this policy is implemented, we're not going to do anything about it. And he didn't get fired. He didn't get blamed from the politicians. It was unbelievable.
It's extraordinary. You know, I was looking at the Ismail İlgün, this Turk who did. He said it was a soldier of Erdogan. By the way, he filmed all these videos. He's got a lot of, you know, hits on the videos and stuff like that. But it's amazing to see that it's like it always turns into the same kind of culture. It doesn't matter if these immigrants are in Sweden or Holland or America. It's this kind of hood rat culture of like hip hop, and it's just the same everywhere you go. I just don't know what it is. They're all attracted to this very same mentality. God, I'm so sick and tired of watching it, to be honest. Sick of it.
Yeah, they want to show that I'm from the streets and life is so hard. And that's what they say, right? And all the while, you say that this guy said he was a soldier of Erdogan, but last I read, he bought off his duty to serve in the Turkish military, which
really?
Every Turk has to. Yeah, so the irony was staggering to me.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
I mean, they always have a big mouth, but usually when you confront them, they shrink like if they were a small ant.
Well, the problem is, in many cases, you know, these are larger groups of guys. They can hang out. No one of them is fucking working or anything like that. So they have like, you know, they have the advantage of constantly being in a group while we in the West, mostly young men, we've been so individualized. We're hyper individual. There's not these. I mean, I know that you guys are changing that, but that we're not accustomed to having these larger groups of people. You know, we've never kind of, obviously we have that history, we have it in the past, but ever since modernization, we've become so hyper-individualized that we don't have that advantage. And frankly, most young, capable men, we're out working, we're out paying for all of this, right? Well, they're just hanging out and terrorizing people. It's amazing.
Yeah, multiple things come together here, as you say. I mean, it's like the economy goes above all, and people have lost a sense of masculinity. I mean, this all comes together in the sense that we have lost any sense of community. And yeah, I think our main purpose therefore is to reinvigorate that sense of community, and to have us find that masculine spirit again, and not value money as much as community. If we can play that role, if we can inspire young men again to band together to find a common purpose, then I think we can really change the world.
Yeah, let's talk a bit about a worst case scenario. It's always good to scare people into submission. If we have newcomers listening, if we have people who are just, either if they live in the Netherlands, or if they, tune in from other parts of the world where they can recognize kind of the same scenario where they are at. How bad could this get, right? If we look at the political situation, coupled with the demographics, coupled with a very hostile incoming group of people who basically project all their problems upon us, the hosts who have allowed them in as the problem, and we're the racists and we're holding them down, etc. If all of these pieces kind of come together, how bad could it get, do you guys think? If you could speculate a little bit, what could be the outcome of this? I mean, demographically, we're being displaced, is going extremely quick. We have a low birth rate. What might be looking at here in 20, 30 years down the line if we don't stand up and do something about this? What do you guys think?
A good example, in my opinion, is the number of foreign students in primary schools. So when I walk past a primary school here in Amsterdam, I see a lot of non-white students. It's unbelievable. As of now, like I mentioned earlier, the population is about, I think, more than 50% non-Dutch. But among young people, or among very young people, it's even worse. So the future of Amsterdam and Rotterdam and The Hague is going to be non-white. That's for sure. With regard to the Muslim issue, I think the more of these people that come in, and it will ultimately lead to war. All these mosques are being financed by vague, mysterious money flows from Turkey and Saudi Arabia. We already imported conflicts between these groups into our nation. For example, there are a lot of fights going on as of now between the Turks and the Kurds.
That's right.
Or between the Gulen supporters and the Erdogan supporters. Between people from India and Moroccans. What we see now, it could get way bigger in the future.
It's scary, you know, because it's like, and we are seen as a force in between all these groups that somehow is going to preserve the peace. And while we're being bankrupted, while we're being, borrowing ourselves into perpetual debt, we're increasingly unable to take care of our own population. Even the security people are giving up on now. I mean, we have situations in Sweden where the politicians are talking about that this is kind of like the new normal and we can no longer protect you. We're urging women not to go out after certain hours and stuff like that. How much are people going to take before they realize what really this all is about?
They continue to take it. I mean, what usually happens is they work for a day, they come home, they eat dinner with family, and then they vent their anger on the internet. And I fear that in 10, 20, and 30 years, that as long as we don't do anything, that it will continue that way. And that by then it will be too late. I mean, it is a slow conquest that is happening right now. And we should really be active in repelling it.
Do you guys, is the manpower there to, I'm not just talking about maybe people who are on our side politically, but I'm just talking about even the Dutch liberals and, all these people are basically not on your side yet. I think that more and more are going to come over. But is the numbers there? Is the demographics there? If you guys could, amass the number of people that you wanted, would that be enough to kind of start changing things around in the right direction? I mean politically initially, and then who knows what it will turn into after that. But the way I see it, and please give me some input on this, guys, but the way I see it is that this could be solved politically, that these people have come in, many of them, under false premises. They've come in under special circumstances, especially this recent migrant wave. And all that's really is lacking at this point is a political will of basically saying these people have overstayed their welcome. We used to open our arms to them to come in, but now that's changing. Now we want them to go back to their countries that they came from. I mean, that's an initial step that would solve a lot of problems. But what do you guys see?
Well, Henrik, I disagree with you on this one. I think the most important aspect regarding this subject is not political. There have been a lot of examples from the past where right-wing politicians gained a lot of traction or even almost won the elections, and all of them failed. McCarthy in the US, Jean-Marie Le Pen, Jörg Haider, Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, all of them have had huge support, still have huge support, but we cannot have right-wing politics in a liberal culture. So therefore, we at Erkenbrand, we agree first the culture has to change,
mm-hmm.
and after that we can have right-wing politics. Because even if tomorrow, let's say, the Sweden Democrats will win in Sweden, who runs the media? Who are the judges? Who runs the educational system? All of them are liberals, and they will remain liberal. So first we have to get these people out and build a new culture. That's more important, in my opinion.
Do we have that time?
Well, we have to do something, I guess.
Of course.
And the political examples I mentioned, all of them failed. So we have to pursue, we have to take a new approach, in my opinion. We have to be different.
And you don't think it's because, and I mean, I agree with you. I definitely understand that that angle to it. But you don't think it's because someone like Geert Wilders is still kind of too soft, that if we got, if we really got someone who's said as it really is and spoke really, really hard, that would that attract more people, do you guys think? Or would that push people even further away? That would even become hyper, even more liberal to go in the opposite direction?
Yeah, I really think the latter. I mean, people are already scared by what Wilders is saying now, and all he's saying now is,
right.
I want no Muslims. That's basically his message. So he's not saying I want all foreigners out.
No.
I mean, that would be pretty outrageous compared to what he's saying. But he's not saying that. I mean, with regards to people being shocked into a more extreme position, yeah, it would rather be shocked into a more liberal position. I mean, the message we're getting from the media is that everything Wilders is saying is bad. We should rather be more open. We should be more accommodating. So they're only going to push harder to the left the more we try to push to the right. So I think the change has to be made through subtle steps. The same way the left has done, in the 60s and after, they have slowly conquered the whole educational system, the whole media system, and slowly changed the spectrum within you have to argue further to the left. And at this point in time, they are playing up the identity question. And I think that we can make use of this, and we should try to inspire our own people to again identify as Europeans, as Dutch people, and so in a sense make use of what the left is propagating for these minorities, and use it on our own, and then outgrow it, of course, because we have to. We have to become way bigger than it is now. But yeah, that's just the strategical approach I see as the only valid one right now.
Yeah, no, I get your point there. You know, in a little bit, I want to talk, as we begin in the second segment later after a break, solutions, you know, kind of some of the angles of what to do about this, how to implement these cultural changes, and also talk about some of the positive signs. We've seen a exponential growth of kind of identity groups, you know, out of the Austrian branches, the Identitaire in France. Things are moving. There's a younger generation coming in. There is a lot of positive signs. We shouldn't just kind of distribute black pills all the time here. But before we do that, let's talk a bit more about the conference here. I just want to make sure that you guys give out all the details again for those who have, you know, kind of, we've sparked the interest at and want to kind of attend and stuff like that. Give us the website again. Remind us about the date, costs, and all these kinds of details.
The website is www.erkenbrand. That's erkenbrand.nl. And the conference will be in the city of Rotterdam on the 27th of September. It will start around 7 o'clock, and the entrance fee will be €10. The speakers will be Millennial Woes, F. Roger Devlin, and one mystery guest.
Yes, send us a mail if you want to come, because we have a specific point where we gather, and from there we walk to the venue. So yeah,
due to security measures, the location remains secret.
I wanted to ask about that. That's just the nature of it. Unfortunately, these days we can't. It's like we're living in the Soviet Union or something. We can't gather. We don't have a freedom of assembly anymore. Well, we have the freedom, but we are pushed out on in other ways. You know, so it's very unfortunate. But I think it's changing. You know, I have to start doing it, right?
Yeah, it is changing, and it's funny you say this, because we couldn't promote our conference on any Dutch medium.
Yeah,
we promoted the conference only on American websites or other foreign websites, but never on the Dutch media or Dutch social media, because it's impossible.
So do they actually check like background before, let's say you would want to do an ad on Facebook or something like that? Would they actually check like the content and things like that and say, no, this violates our terms of services?
Well, that's not really what I'm afraid of, but I think what would happen if we would announce it on a Dutch medium or on Dutch social media, then people will call the location of the conference and they will thread these people, or they will go there and surprise us. I think if something like that would happen, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the leftists have this whole database of all right-wing activists, the Antifa, so to speak. They are continually looking for people who disagree with them. And most right-wing people just don't want to end up on the internet as being labeled a neo-Nazi or whatever. So, yeah, we have to take certain measures to keep them away, or at least keep them guessing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, folks, support these guys. You know, travel to Rotterdam, even if you're in another country. Definitely go. You know, show your support, show your face, show up there, and help out. Connect with other people. That's the more important thing. Start building networks across European countries. I think one of the biggest problems we've had, unfortunately, in Europe, has been language barriers to a large extent. It's difficult to connect with Germans and French people, unfortunately. I mean, Holland, most there are excellent in English, so there shouldn't be that many problems. But yeah, that's really what needs to happen here next. It's really those networks that start to be built. I could even see like a cross-European support network of some kind that we start, you know, across the national boundaries, start helping each other out initially, because if we don't have the numbers within our own country, if we start helping us out in different countries, you know, in Europe, then it's definitely a larger base that we have right there, you know?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I can see some positive developments, of course, just like you said, but unfortunately, we're running out of time.
That's it. This is a time issue. We will be displaced. We will be pushed into a corner of our countries. We could talk more about this in a second, but it's a question of, you know, what happens at that point. Is this going to turn into Spain again, you know, under the Visigoths, when the Muslims were pouring in? It was a little bit of a different scenario there, of course, but something similar could happen, where we're pushed into a corner, if you will, of the country, and then from there try to regain power. But we can speculate more about that in the second hour. Folks, we'll have the links up. As I said, please do attend, support these guys, what they're doing, show your face. Connect with more people. It's always a lot of fun and good, and an excellent kind of next step to go out in the real world and actually do something about this and starting to connect. So erkenbrand.nl, will have the website up for the spelling issue for those of you who doesn't know the word. So yeah, we'll take a short break here, gentlemen. Take five. Stay with us. We'll be right back, and then we'll continue with more. Well, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. The second hour is coming up with Bart and Michael. Get a subscription with us. Support what we do. Get full access to our archive. RedIceMembers.com is the website. We'll have more info about the live streaming event on our site, redice.tv/live. But stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. Much more coming up in the second hour.